You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
And I'm Jonathan Capehart, sitting in today for Leonard Lopate. When Elma Jessup gives birth to twins, one white and one black, in Cotton County, Georgia, in 1930, one of the field hands, Janice Jackson, is accused of having raped the girl and is lynched. What follows is the tale of a town trying to come to terms with what they have done. In a new book called The 12 Mile Straight, New York Times bestselling author Eleanor Henderson paints a vivid portrait of rural life in southern Georgia during the Depression through Elma Jessup's life. It was published by Echo, and I'm very pleased that it's brought Eleanor Henderson to the show. And this is the kickoff for your book tour, because the book is out today.
That's
congratulations.
Right. Thanks for having me here today.
Thank you for being here. Your last novel, which said your debut, dealt with a very different time, the early days of the AIDS epidemic and the straight edge movement. Why did you choose to set this novel during the Great Depression?
Well, with my first book, I was really drawn to the world that my husband grew up in, which was skateboarding the Lower East Side in the 1980s. And in a similar way, even though this book is really about a very different subject, I was drawn to telling the stories of my father's childhood in South Georgia during the Depression. So he was born in 1932 in a small town to a family of sharecroppers. And I grew up hearing stories about growing up on the farm. And I had wanted to write a book set in Georgia for a long time and really wanted to see that world through the eyes of somebody who would have grown up at the same time my father did.
And what about why Cotton County, Georgia? Is that where your father, that county where he was born?
Cotton County is an invention. I think anybody who has read Faulkner's Yaknapatawpha County has dreamed of creating their own county. And so I had a lot of fun creating this county, Cotton County, and the county seat within it, a town called Florence. So my father grew up in Ben Hill County in Fitzgerald, Georgia, which is a different kind of town. This county is not based on the county that my father grew up in, but it takes on some of the characteristics of some of the places that fell on hard times during the Depression, and really were on hard times even before.
So what about that time and that space, meaning Georgia, that fascinated you?
Well, I have really strong feelings about Georgia, but really conflicted feelings about Georgia. You know, I love the landscape and spent a lot of time there as a kid, and was drawn to the natural world, but also really hadn't confronted my own history and my own connection to that place in terms of the darker corners of the Jim Crow South in particular. And so the stories that I heard growing up around my family table were stories of hard work and sort of innocent fun. And I didn't hear stories about the African-American neighbors. I didn't hear stories about the lynching that took place 2 years before my father was born, 10 miles from where he was born. And when I began to really look at those two kind of conflicting narratives, I wanted to try to bring them into conversation with each other.
So, well then, let's talk about the Jessup family. Who are they?
So, maybe the main character in the novel is, as you announced, Elma Jessup, and she is an 18-year-old white girl, daughter of a white sharecropper named Juke Jessup. And unlike many farm families that had 8, 10, 12 kids to fill the fields, this was an only child, and so she grows up helping her father on the farm, and living with them is a young black girl, a little bit younger than she, named Nan, who is taken into the family when her mother dies. Her mother was the maid. And so it's this kind of makeshift family that has a lot of love in it, but also a lot of darkness, a lot of manipulation that drew me, this idea of a kind of formed family that in some ways was pretty common and in other ways really broke a lot of the rules.
So Nan, who was the little black girl who played, they were very close, Nan and Elma.
Right.
But Nan couldn't speak.
That's right.
Why is that?
Well, Nan's mother cut her tongue out when she was a year old. And it's sort of a mystery for much of the book why she does this exactly, but she is left unable to speak, and Elma takes it upon herself to sort of speak for Nan. And she's always by her side, always trying to speak for her and translate for others. And it was that relationship between the two of them, again, full of so much love, but also at a real sort of imbalance in terms of the power between them, that for me was a way to approach telling the story as a white woman now living in the North who had a lot of anxiety about speaking for and about these Southerners, many of them Black. I began to, you know, wonder what it meant to speak for others. Some of that comes out in Elma's inability to speak for Nan. Mm. Sometimes she gets it wrong and isn't really able to understand what Nan's experience is.
Eleanor Henderson is the author of the book that comes out, published today, The 12 Miles Straight, and it's published by Echo. So am I pronouncing his name right? Genus. Mm-hmm. Genus Jackson. He started working on the Jessup farm. When did that happen? And where did he come from? Who is he?
So Genus Jackson comes in off a boxcar. You know, he's a traveler, and he arrives in Cotton County as kind of a mystery. People don't know his background. Many of the people in the town, both Blacks and whites, distrust him because they don't know who his father is. They don't know what his history is. And he ends up working as a field hand on the Jessup farm in the shack on the property. So there's the big house that the Jessup family lives in, and they are sort of untraditional sharecroppers in that they have a little bit more power than maybe some others do. And he comes in to the farm, and pretty early in the book you discover that Elma has sort of developed this crush on him from across the distance between their two houses. And he becomes quite unwillingly taken into this family drama, especially after these two twins are born. So early in the novel, the first chapter, these two major events shape the story that's to come. These two twins are born, one of them light-skinned, one of them dark-skinned, to Elma. And as a result, Genus, who's the closest field hand, is accused of raping her and is then lynched and dragged down the 12-mile straight, which is where the novel gets its name.
Freddie Wilson, he is Elma's fiance.
That's right.
How did he react?
Well, Freddie and Juke are the ones who have a hand in leading that mob. And if there's a villain in the book, I think, you know, it's probably Freddie. I wanted to create a little more nuance in the other main villain in the book, who's Juke, Elma's father. But I thought it was important to try to, you know, create some gray areas that not all hate looked exactly the same. Some was born out of privilege, and some was born out of poverty, and all of these characters are sort of fighting for whatever power they can maintain. But Freddie comes in early in the book and leads this mob violence and then runs off. And so we're sort of waiting for much of the book for him to return.
And what happened to Genus in Cotton County, Georgia, is not uncommon.
Right. Right. When I was researching this book, I was looking at a book called The Tragedy of Lynching by Arthur Raper, who's a North Carolinian sociologist. It was published in 1933. And I was astonished to see that for 3 years, from 1927 to 1929, there were no recorded lynchings in the state of Georgia. In fact, when I was at the Georgia Historical Society in Savannah doing some research in the microfilm, I came across a really chilling headline, which was published in December 1929, Lynching to be a Lost Art.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then in January, just a few weeks later, there's a horrific lynching in Irwin County, which is just about 10 miles from where my father was born. And I never heard anything about that lynching growing up. And 1,000 people participated in it. And then there were 5 more lynchings that took place that year in Georgia. And so it was this really horrific resurgence of violence in a state that had, you know, managed to maintain some peace for a short time. And so, as you say, this wasn't uncommon then. And of course, for me, impossible not to think about the resurgence of this kind of mob violence that we just saw recently.
Does it surprise you, shock you? I don't know the words that I'm looking for, to know that such a horrific extrajudicial event could happen with 1,000 people spectating, because that's what they were doing, spectating, posing for pictures, sending postcards around, because that was also part of it. Right. And yet no one talks about it. There is probably even no memory of it collectively, but there are thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, ancestors of these people, descendants of these people, who are walking around with this secret.
Right. It does shock and horrify me, of course. It's sort of impossible to believe, you know, and I followed a little bit of the trail of the families of both black boy who was accused of killing this white girl in Irwin County in 1930, the descendants of both of those people. And on Facebook, there are still actually groups of people who are who say, you know, the story was very complicated. And so to the degree that people do talk about it, you know, there are still a lot of, I think, high emotions. And you know, I think there are a couple of different responses. On the one hand, you know, so much silence and so much denial, which is so dangerous, of course. And then on the other hand, you know, there's still this defensiveness, you know, as though we're still living in 1930. We're still, in fact, I learned more and more, living in the Civil War, you know, that a lot of this defensiveness against outsiders and Northerners and a lot of the injury that I think is still being felt, you know, goes back to that, the old wounds of the Confederate South.
So you were born in Greece?
That's right.
Is your mom Greek? Anyone Greek?
Nobody's Greek.
Where does Greece figure into all of this?
Yeah, well, my father, who was born in Fitzgerald, Georgia, became an architect. He was an architecture student at Georgia Tech, and then he went to New York City, and he was one of the people in his family who left and lived in the North for much of his life after that. And then I was working as an architect abroad in Greece when I was born. But I spent most of my life in Florida. That's right, which is, you know, not really the Deep South. I spent some of my childhood in Gainesville, which one might argue is the Deep South, and then in West Palm Beach. So it's an interesting relationship for me to the South.
Excuse me. I was trying to sneeze while you were still talking. I'm sorry about that. And now you teach at Ithaca.
Right.
And what do you teach?
I teach fiction writing, but a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, a little bit of everything. So do you like fiction writing?
I love fiction writing. It's my first love. But I also teach writing historical fiction, and I teach senior seminars and literature classes as well. So I get to teach just about whatever I want.
And what's the, so now, so your first book was about in the early days of the AIDS epidemic. This book is in the Depression, dealing with Jim Crow South and lynchings and really America's ongoing dark secrets. What's the next book?
Oh, don't ask me that on Pub Day.
No.
I'm not sure what the next book is going to be honest. And part of that for me is about anxiety about writing in this political moment. You know, I felt as though I just wrote a book that was accidentally relevant. You mm-hmm. know, when I started writing it 6 years ago, I was really fearful that it would be irrelevant and that nobody would care and that the world didn't need another book about Jim Crow South. And every year it became more painfully relevant to me. So it leaves me in a bit of an odd position because I, you know, I think the obligations of fiction writers are different today. So I'm not sure what it will be, but I don't think it will be set in either the straight edge hardcore scene of New York or cotton farmers in the South.
And what's interesting in your response there is that even though you were afraid that your book would hit with a thud six years ago, it's you had it in your heart. It was a book you needed. You felt in your heart you wanted to write and needed to write.
Yeah, I did. It didn't come without a sense of terror that I would fail at being able to write about this time and place and these people who are so distant from me. But I did feel some sense of urgency as a writer to explore that territory and that world that that felt really important and necessary.
I'm Jonathan Capehart. In today for Leonard Lopate, I've been speaking with Eleanor Henderson about her new novel, 12 Miles Straight. And tonight at 7:30, Eleanor will appear in conversation with author Brendan Matthews at Books Are Magic bookstore in Brooklyn. For more information, visit our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.